Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News. Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Washington. Ron, where are you?
I'm in Berkeley, California. Ken, isn't everybody? This is where you should be. It is a sunny and gorgeous June day in Berkeley, California.
I would be in Berkeley if I was a liberal communist sympathizer, but I'm not.
Still dealing in the cliches of past decades. Berkeley has moved on, Ken. I think it's time for you to. There's a reason to be in California, Ken, because California is going to be a keystone state in the choice of the next presidential nominees of the two major parties in the United States. And it's been a very long time since we've been able to say that.
Well, if California is going to be a keystone state, then I would say that Pennsylvania would be a golden state.
Pennsylvania is not yet committed to a date, as I understand it, but California has moved to February 5th, and California will be, if you will, the biggest building block of all on the new virtual national primary day, with 20-some other states also joining in on that day. And that's putting a lot of pressure on states like Iowa and New Hampshire to prove that they're still as important as they've been. Right now, there's a big division between the kind of political indications you're getting from Iowa and New Hampshire and the political implications you're getting from nationwide polls. And we're really starting to see two different tiers of front runners.
And I will make the case that I am much more interested and I think are much more relevant the Iowa and New Hampshire polls right now as opposed to the national polls. 4 years ago at this time, the leader in the Democratic national polls was a guy named Joe Lieberman, who didn't do so well, as I recall, in the primaries and caucuses, but he had name recognition. Now, it's a little different this time, too, because I think that Hillary Clinton is leading in all the national polls, and yet I think by all the kinds of markings you make of who is the front runner, she is that on the Democratic side, she is the front runner with money, with endorsements, with polling numbers, with the kind of performance she showed in the debates.
But in Iowa and New Hampshire, you have a lot of attention being paid to people like John Edwards and even to Bill Richardson, who is not considered one of the top three candidates on the Democratic side nationwide, but is doing rather well or getting into the double digits and attracting a certain amount of attention in New Hampshire. Will that strategy that I would actually call like a Dick Gephardt strategy from 1988 or something of that nature go out, win Iowa, don't worry about the other states, they'll all fall into place if you just do surprisingly well in that kickoff event. Is that strategy still going to hold up when we've got a February 5th virtual national primary?
Well, there are the conflicting arguments on this. There's a Rudy Giuliani argument that he may not win Iowa, New Hampshire, but because he appeals to moderate Republicans who may turn out in New York, New Jersey, Florida, California, that he could do well in the February 5th states. But I would make the argument that because there are so many states voting on February 5th, that I think the message that comes out of Iowa and New Hampshire will be overwhelmingly important. And I think that if you get shut out in those first two states, you could forget about what's going to happen on February 5th.
Do you think that states that otherwise are not particularly interested in a certain candidate, a John Edwards or a Bill Richardson, are going to be turned around by the vote they see out of Iowa and New Hampshire? Do you think that can happen in this current environment, in this new environment with that February 5th blockbuster primary the way it has in the past? I think Giuliani's betting, and I think even John McCain is betting, that we're into a new world here. And that's why you see both of those candidates pulling out of the straw poll in Ames, Iowa, that's coming up in August. Traditionally, a must-do event.
Well, it's a must-do event if you like to fundraise for the Republican Party in Iowa. And we have seen that the media does make media's plural, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, the media do make a big deal of this event. Of course, ostensibly, it's all it is a fundraising event for the Iowa GOP. But we did see—
Because the candidates have to bring in a certain amount of money to pay for these people, and they actually literally have to put money in the coffers of the state Republican Party.
That's exactly right. But the point is that it is important in the sense that I remember, I guess, was it Elizabeth Dole or Dan Quayle or both in 1999, both did very poorly in the Iowa straw poll and were not long after gone from the race.
Does it surprise you, though, to see both the putative national polls frontrunner Joe Giuliani pulling out of Iowa and John McCain, the man who was supposed to be the next in line inheritor of the Republican nomination this year, pulling out of Ames, Iowa so early?
Well, it's surprising, and yet it's not, given the fact that Mitt Romney, who for the longest time was considered number three and probably is still considered number three in the national polls, or maybe even number four with Fred Thompson about to join the pack. But Mitt Romney is doing all the right things. He's raising all the money. He's getting the key endorsements. And he's really on the ground in states, strongly on the ground in states like New Hampshire, Iowa, and Florida. And there are a lot of people who felt felt that by McCain and Giuliani pulling out, it's robbing Romney a major headline on August 11th, although...
Because people won't care so much if he wins if the big guys weren't there.
Exactly. Matter of fact, the funny thing is there was a big announcement this week from the Tommy Thompson campaign. The announcement was he has a major announcement to make about his campaign. So people said, oh, is he going to, you know, change his name to Fred, or is he going to withdraw from the race altogether? But ultimately, all he was saying that I'm going to stay in the Iowa straw poll, and he urged the other Republicans to stay as well.
I cannot think of a graceful segue here, but Ken, I think we need to talk about the fact that this week the president came up to the Senate on Tuesday, talked to the Republicans' regular Tuesday policy luncheon, the significance of which is he had only done that one other time in his entire presidency.
Right,
and
that
was actually had to sit and listen to these Republican senators and hear their concerns.
It's very interesting, a president with 28% approval rating lecturing his fellow Republicans what is good for the country. But the point is, one, the president would love to leave office with something on his legacy, second-term legacy, and the immigration overhaul would be that. But two, these Republicans know that their constituencies hate this bill. We saw Saxby Chambliss, who I think is a very conservative Republican, being booed in Georgia by home state Republicans because he's a sellout on this. And I think that all the Republicans—
Who see him as a sellout on this.
Who see them as
a sellout. He and Johnny Isaacson, the other Georgia senator, have both been supportive of the compromise, supportive of John Kyle's compromise, the Arizona
and
Senate.
And John Kyle has gotten getting held, too. And Kyle is as solid a conservative as there is in the Senate. And so I think, I mean, there may ultimately be another incarnation of this bill. But for right now, for President Bush to come out and assist, you know, to have his bring his political capital to Capitol Hill. And look, we saw what happened in 2006. It was a referendum on George W. Bush. I suspect 2008 will be the same referendum. And look, Bush's name will not be on the ballot anymore. And these other candidates will. And that, we saw that also with the vote on Alberto Gonzalez this week.
Well, that was interesting, though, because actually, in a sense, the Republican defense was effective there because the Democrats needed 60 votes to move to a vote that would express no confidence in the attorney general. And because they couldn't get nearly 60 votes, there were only 53. In that sense, the president was able to prevail, even though, of course, it was a rather defensive maneuver and only a procedural kind of victory.
And nobody actually, if you listen to that mini debate on, or it may have been a Mickey debate.
There was no debate. Nobody came out to defend Gonzalez.
No, that's exactly right. What the Republicans
even
did,
Joe Lieberman, the Democrat who voted for him, wouldn't get out and give a speech in his favor.
Oh no, don't say he's a Democrat because you'll get hate mail. Actually, he's an independent Democrat.
Well, he in fact was elected as an independent and defeated a Democrat in Connecticut last November. But he does serve as a chairman of a committee in the
Democratic
Senate
role
and
controlled.
Calls himself an independent Democrat.
Exactly right.
Yes, we can go around and around about all the complications around Joe Lieberman, but here was another case where he flung a defiant vote in the face of his Democratic colleagues. But
the only Democrat to do so, by the way.
The only one. Yeah. And even he, though, in doing that, did not even give an explanatory speech to say that he thought Alberto Gonzalez was a great guy. The fact is no one is defending this person in town except George W. Bush, the one person who could encourage Gonzalez to actually go out the door or fire him.
Look, the 7 Republicans voted for this no-confidence bill, 5 of whom are up for re-election next year. But clearly far more Republicans would love for Alberto Gonzalez to either disappear or just vanish, or President Bush to take some kind of action. And clearly the president says he won't do that. But it was very interesting to hear all the Republicans talk about how Chuck Schumer and the Democrats playing politics with this no-confidence vote. And it was pure politics because, you know, look, if President Bush hasn't heard enough from the Republicans about why Gonzalez has to go, obviously a motion from Chuck Schumer is not going to change his mind. But
at the same time, the president is willing to go not one whit further in defense of Scooter Libby, who used to be the chief of staff for his vice president and now appears, as of this week, the judge denying him a chance to stay at home while his case is on appeal. Looks like he's headed for jail in the very near future, unless the president does something about it, and the president hasn't lifted a finger.
Well, I mean, a lot of Republicans...
How do you square that with the way he's dealing with Alberto Gonzalez?
A lot of Republicans say he's got it exactly backwards, that he should step up for Scooter Libby, who is loyal Republican, who ostensibly took the fall for Dick Cheney or whoever was, you know, spreading this stuff about Valerie Plame. Whereas Alberto Gonzalez, he's been a loyalist to a fault, but he's been a loyalist all along with no constituency behind him. The Republican leadership in the House and Senate don't particularly care for him. He's certainly not helping anybody, given his views on Guantanamo, given his views on the national secret surveillance, given his views on the fired U.S. attorneys. So, I mean, if anything, is an embarrassment. I would think it's more Alberto Gonzalez. Ultimately, I think that Bush does pardon Libby. I think Bush is deliberately saying nothing about it right now, wanting to see what the judge would say, wanting to see if there's any stay of appeal. But ultimately, I don't think Libby spends a moment in prison.
He has the option of commuting his sentence, does he not? He could just leave the conviction in place but commute the sentence to no jail time.
That's my understanding. That is correct.
And the president has taken a hit in the polls in the last couple, 3 weeks. Clearly, in addition to all the Democrats and independents who have deserted him, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, he has had a measurable drop among Republicans and Republican-leaning independents who are no longer as supportive of the president as they were even so recently as April. He's actually dropped down to about the low 60s, mid-60s in terms of his support among Republicans, and that's unprecedented.
And that's why for him to go up to the Hill and talk to his fellow Republicans saying what they must do, they must look at themselves and say, what are you, nuts? I mean, following this guy, you remember, as you well remember, Everett Dirksen pointing to Thomas Dewey at the 52 convention saying, we followed you before and you led us down the road to defeat. Remember that, Ron?
Ev Dirksen which one?
52 convention.
1952. Okay. Ken,
yeah.
I think you've outdone yourself this week.
God.
And that's why I'm going to have to say that that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow archaic NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
And from the archives in Berkeley, California, I'm Ron Elving.
And in Washington, I'm Everett Dirksen.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Peace. Peace out.